On the Bechdelcast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdelcast.
Hi, welcome to the Bechdelcast. My name is Jamie.
My name's Caitlin.
This is our podcast about women in movies. Hey, are they doing a good job? Sometimes.
A lot of movies aren't.
Well, they're doing a great job. But
sometimes movies do a pretty good job. And how they treat women. That's what our podcast is about, the portrayal of women in movies. It's inspired by the Bechdel test. Mm-hmm. If you're not familiar, it's a test that you apply to a movie. It requires that the movie has two female characters. They have to talk to each other, and their conversation has to be about something other than a man.
Right. Today's episode's special for a number of reasons, I would say.
Yes, I agree.
First of all, it's by listener request. A lot of people were asking us for an episode about this movie that we saw together anyways. So, you know, thank you for reminding us of something we probably should have thought of. and we've both seen it twice now.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this episode's special because my brother's here and he's sitting in the dog bed.
Yes, in the corner.
By my request.
Cast him.
Yeah, and Aristotle was like, you can sit in a chair. And he was like, I'm fine with the dog
bed.
He's like,
I know my place.
All that to say, the men in my life are very well trained. And they know, and they're told to go to the dog bed. The dog bed, they will stay. Yeah. He's being very quiet right now.
Good boy.
Yeah, throw him a treat. He's good. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm so excited to talk about this today, especially because if you haven't seen the movie that, you know, you clicked on the episode you know it's about. If you haven't seen this movie twice, you got to see it twice.
You got to see it twice. It's better on the second viewing.
It really is.
Yeah, we saw it. So it's today is we are recording this on June 6th. The movie came out on June 2nd.
Yes, we saw it on June 2nd.
Yes. And then
we both saw it on June 4th, but separately yeah. That time.
Right. But before we get into the movie and any more discussion about that, we should introduce our guest.
We should.
She is a host at Nerdist.com. She also is the creator and host of a podcast on the Nerdist Network called Bizarre States. Jessica Chobot.
Hi, everybody.
Hi. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
We're stoked.
So we're talking about Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. Dodoy.
Oh, yeah.
I've actually seen it twice as well.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
And you're right. It is better on the second viewing. That said, its problems are also more glaringly obvious on the second viewing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm excited to talk about that, too.
Yeah, this is the first movie that we've done where our episode is being recorded and will come out very, very shortly after the movie is released to the public.
Mm-hmm.
If we have fans in Germany, I don't even know if this movie's out there yet. So sorry.
Oh,
but
that's a good point. Yeah, I don't know.
But here we are talking about Wonder Woman. We've seen it twice. I just want to put it out there that I loved it and I thought it was great. Not without its problems. It has some flaws here and there. But overall, I was pretty blown away by the movie.
I liked it the first time, and I loved it the second time.
Mm-hmm.
The first time, honestly, it's interesting because I did a podcast of talking about it the day after I saw it the first time and hadn't seen it the second time, and was really stuck on the fact that I had no idea who Chris Pine was.
Yeah, that was so surprising to me.
I thought I knew who Chris Pine was, but I was dead wrong. Because I leaned over to you in the movie theater. I'm like, who is this actor? Yeah. And I said, his line reads, remind me of Brendan Fraser, which I stand by.
No, can't.
Oh,
agree.
I gotta disagree too.
They're
reminiscent of that kind of like side eye, little winky, winky,
very winky,
charming,
yes,
kind of delivery. But I feel like Brendan Fraser for those kind of movies that we're familiar with him in, like The Mummy, let's just say,
yes,
is a little bit more like winky, winky, charming, but kind of doofusy, whereas Chris Pine was like a little bit more sexy.
Mm-hmm. He is definitely a little more sexy. But the one that really
not that Brendan Fraser is not sexy.
Listen,
like
we
don't get me wrong
all
here.
Let Brendan Fraser take us where we stand.
I am having a stroke. One, because we're talking about Brendan Fraser. Two, because our conversation isn't passing the Bechdel test.
I was actually just going to bring that up. But is it okay if we talk about men as objects?
Yes.
Yes.
So that's
always,
okay, right?
Yes. Always fine.
But I think that, okay, for all you Brendan Fraser heads out there, I know you're out there. I know you're listening. I know you're like, when are they going to talk about Brendan Fraser? In the episode about the movie he's not in. The scenes where Chris Pine is specifically under the influence of the lasso of truth, the line where he's like, I'm a spy. That's very Brendan Fraser. I stand by it.
Okay, I'll let you have
And we can close this. The book on Brendan Fraser now.
Yes, please. If you want to hear more, listen to our episode about The Mummy coming out soon.
I'll start releasing mini-sodes about just my thoughts on Brendan Fraser.
Can I jump in really quick?
Absolutely. Yeah.
His acting in that scene, I thought, really justified what could have been a really cheesy weapon. Like, let me preface all this with, I'm a massive Wonder Woman fan.
Yes.
And so when I saw the trailers leading up, or like the sneak peeks leading up to the movie, mm-hmm. when they would start showcasing her using the lasso, I was really nervous because it was just such a bright color against everything else's muted colors. Yeah. And I was like, is this going to look too cartoony? How are they going to make a lasso of truth not a cheesy weapon mm-hmm. in a movie that's supposed to be an action movie? Mm-hmm. And I think his acting actually really justified it and turned it into something believable.
I think he did a good job. I'm a Chris Pine fan now, and I know who he is.
This might be his best acting yet, in my opinion, because I was really not a fan of him. I was like, oh, just another generic dude in Hollywood. Yay.
Literally a man named Chris. There were so many Chris. I was like, is this
the
Chris?
And they all look the same. Have you seen that lineup?
Yes. Yes. There are so many wealthy Chris's out there. I can't keep them straight.
Chris Pine, Chris Evans, Hemsworth,
and
now Pratt. Yeah, mm-hmm. and Pratt too. But they did like headshot lineups of all of them from like red carpets and stuff. And they look so cookie cutter, exactly the same.
Well, mm-hmm. just like,
thank God they're good to decent actors.
That's all it takes when you look like that. If you're good to decent, you're good to go.
Yeah.
Also, as of yesterday, there's now 4 men named James on Late Night.
Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, James Corden, and Jim Jefferies.
Jim Jefferies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Either.
So, you know, welcome to the fold. Yeah. Another James.
If your name is Chris or James,
you'll be fine.
You are hereby banned from my life. No Chris's or James allowed in Caitlin's life.
Yeah. There's some Kevins that I could do without, you know, like if we'll plan out the revolution more carefully later on.
Sure.
But
sure.
Wonder Woman.
Yes. So, Jessica, you're super familiar with the comic books and everything like that.
Yep.
I'm not at all.
Yeah,
I've never read, I don't think, any comic book ever. So whoops on that. So it's great that you're here to, you know, if there's any context that, because I'm experiencing Wonder Woman only through having seen this movie. The only thing I think I know about Wonder Woman otherwise, just from like pop culture knowledge, is that she has an invisible plane. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. It depends. I actually am a fan of the invisible jet because that's kind of when it started getting used in comics is when I kind of got into comics at that age. So for me, it's kind of a nostalgia thing. I don't necessarily need to have it show up in movies or comics currently, mm-hmm. but I'm not like, burn the invisible jet, you know?
Yeah.
There were moments where, so she would be able to, I think when she first started, she was only able to like jump really high and far. At some point, she got Hermes winged sandals, which allowed her to fly.
Oh, okay.
And then at a different point, she got the jet. And then she just was straight up able to fly like Superman. Mm-hmm. So she's had a couple different variations on how she got around. But I think now the default is just straight up flying.
Because she is a demigod.
Yeah.
right.
Yeah, she can just fly.
In the movie, Ares calls her a straight up goddess.
Mm, yeah.
But that could be debatable too, because technically, I think her mother, Hippolyta, would have to be a goddess for her to be a pure goddess. So she would be a demigoddess since she had one, depending on what Hippolyta's backstory is then, one human mother or human-esque mother and one actual full-fledged god father. Mm. Godfather, God, comma, father. But then, it's the Greek god. So they kind of did whatever the hell they wanted. And if they wanted you to be a full-fledged god or goddess, they just would make you one.
Is that origin story part of the comic books, too?
So she's got a couple, mm-hmm. per typical comics backstories. I actually liked her being made of clay and just had, you know, given a breath of life. And so she's, you know, her original backstory was that she was created from clay. The movie has it. And then another one is that she's just straight up the daughter of Zeus. Mm-hmm. And so now the movie has it where they imply that the Amazons were actually created by the gods as kind of messengers to men.
Right.
And that there's just some random uprising because men are starting to suck and be dicks And so all of the warrior women are like, fuck this shit. I'm killing you all. Mm-hmm. And kind of does this weird uprising. But they never say why the real... They just imply that it's because of the evilness that are in men's hearts.
It's all vague. Yeah. Well, it's like implied
it's
that like...
super vague.
Professor Lupin is whispering to guys like, what if you did a bad thing?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why men are bad now.
But I don't know. I don't know why you would call it an uprising. It would just be a war. So like what... Because
right.
when you uprise... against usually being, you know, held down right. because of something, and they're just kind of just attacking. So I don't know that they might have done that vaguely on purpose for mm-hmm. potential backstories in the second iteration, if we get it. And I think then, so Hippolyta has been saying she's the daughter of Clay in order to hide her from Ares.
Right.
But then it comes out in the wash that she's actually just a straight up daughter of Zeus.
Right.
As well.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all kind of nutty and all over the place.
Yeah.
Got it, got it. I think that's a good transition into the recap. Ready?
Recap. Go.
So we open on this paradise island called Themyscira, full of Amazon women warriors. Not a man among them. Just these, like, badass warrior Amazons.
They're
training.
Strong. They have
strong.
Horses.
Right. They've got bows and arrows, and they kick ass all the time. As a child, Diana, her mother is the queen of the Amazons, Hippolyta, and Diana's all like, I'm a kid, but I want to start training. And she's like, no, I'm not going to let you start training, because her aunt, Antiope, which is like Antiope, you know? She's her aunt. Get it?
True.
So Antiope, they like start training her in secret, and then Diana becomes this like great warrior. Meanwhile, there's like this hint, like maybe Diana's something else besides an Amazon. We don't know.
Robin Wright's dropping hints.
Dropping mm-hmm. hints.
Dropping hints. That's what her character's for. She's there to kick ass and drop hints
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
then die.
She's grown up now. She's kicking ass. Everything's great until a plane flies into... I'm also forgetting a lot of, like, backstory where, like, Zeus, he created Diana. And then his son, Ares, the god of war, is this bad guy. And he's all like, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to kill you. They're training to fight in the war that may end all wars, because they're worried that Ares is going to come back. So that's what all the Amazons are preparing for. And then Chris Pine shows up in a plane, and he's like, I'm from World War One, and I don't know where I am, because the island they're on is protected. Zeus is like, no one can come here, and I'm going to protect you. No one knows where this is. But somehow Chris Pine makes his way through,
right.
And she's like, whoa.
I have questions about that, too.
She's like, wow, I've never seen a man before. You're cute, maybe?
And that scene that is shot for shot, the scene from The Little Mermaid,
uh-huh.
where he's like, what? She's pretty. And
right.
she's like against
oh,
the sky. And
the
she's
crap,
like,
I never thought
pretty.
Of that. You're totally right. It's definitely
exactly
The Little Mermaid.
Minus right. her bursting into song. We were rudely talking about it in the movie theater. But we were like, what? Like, it's...
Because she rescues his plane crashes into the ocean, and then she dives in and pulls him to shore, and then is like looking over him.
But she's just there, and she's like shaking her head, and is somehow very beautiful in an upshot. And you're just like, fuck you, you know?
I know.
Yeah,
not a good angle for anyone except for Gal Gadot.
What happened? Because this is my problem. I'm bad in all my angles but an upshot. Like, that's the only one I can pull off. Everything else is just something. Like, oh, the lighting is so bad.
You're a unicorn. Like, there's...
only the upshot now looks good. But then everything else, because everything else just drips. And then you're just like, oh, she's obviously so tired.
There's not... I mean, Gal Gadot does not have a bad angle that I know of.
Oh, no. And she, if you meet her in real life, too, it's just so annoyingly perfect. So
have you met her?
Yeah, and she's nice on top of it, which makes it suck
God.
Even more. I know.
Yeah.
God. You're like, oh, and you're nice. I don't even have the luxury of disliking you. Because you're just cool. This she's sucks.
Love her.
Damn her.
Love her. Damn her.
Love her. Curse her. But it's okay.
But also, I support her 100%.
Mm-hmm. But yes, that scene is exactly like The Little Mermaid.
For sure. So they discover that he's from the war to end all wars. And she's like, well, this is what we're training to do. We have to go out and stop this war. Mm-hmm. And her mom's like, no, that doesn't sound like a good idea. That sounds dangerous. And she's like, no, I'm going. So Diana and... Chris Pine's character, whose name is Steve Trevor.
Love that one. I mean, and I read a few of the early comics back in high school. I just love that Wonder Woman's boyfriend's name is Steve.
Steve.
Mm-hmm. That's like great. My high school boyfriend's name was Steve. And so I was like, It's a parallel.
You're Wonder Woman. He's Steve.
You are merely Steve.
So they go out to London. He's a spy for the British Army.
He's a spy.
So I'm a spy. And he is like trying to infiltrate the German army to gather intel on like their weapons and stuff like that. So she goes with him because it's her duty to stop the god of war, Ares, because she's sure that this is who's responsible for this war that's happening. And everyone's like, the god of war, Ares? No, that's dumb. Turns out she's right because he's the big bad played by Professor Lupin from Harry Potter.
Which, come on.
That's bad casting.
We were saying that. Okay, yes.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're all in agreement.
I mean, good actor, but bad physical casting.
Agree.
And then also just, I don't know, like, I felt nothing when that twist happened.
He's not dangerous looking enough.
Yeah, where it's like, oh,
they're just like, oh, this dork is really angry at me all of a sudden.
Right.
Like, all right. And then he dresses up in cosplay. Okay, that's a little creepier, I guess. Like, whatever.
When Professor Lupin did the lava eyes thing, where he's like, and now I'm a lava god. And you're just like, fuck you. You know, I liked the twist that it was Professor Lupin. It's like,
oh my god, did you not see it a mile away? I instantly knew the minute he popped up on screen. I'm like, oh, there he is.
Really?
Absolutely.
I knew that Ludendorff wasn't going to be the big bad. I feel like I knew he was just a pawn, but I didn't know. I thought it might have been Dr. Maru, Dr. Poison.
I hoped it was Dr. Poison.
I thought it was her.
I would have preferred it to be her, but at the minute I saw, I'm like, there's the herring. Like, that's, I knew. It honestly, because of the casting, believe it or not, it made no sense to have him in the movie. Like, such a high-level actor that's so recognizable
that
to just randomly pop on screen as a side character. I'm like, nope, he's the one.
I was like, I feel nothing. Like, I get that this is where the story needs to end. But, I mean, I would have preferred it was Dr. Poison and her weird reverse Phantom of the Opera mask. I thought that was fun.
And then they never explained why she was the way she was. It was just like,
and then,
exposed at the end that you could see her screwed up face. And
that's what it was.
Yeah.
Like, what else
like,
would have been
under
there?
That's not a scary reveal, really.
No.
Or shocking. And then, okay, so show me, fine, if that's the scene you want to keep.
Right.
But then justify it somehow with some sort of backstory other than just her regular picture on a war room like whiteboard,
right, where you're just like, oh, she has nice cheekbones,
like, so right,
what's,
and I was like,
the story,
well, that there, yeah, she's those look good, yeah,
right.
I just, it made no, there were so many bad edits and weak story holes.
Yes. The third act, I feel like it could have been tightened up a bit.
I thought that Dr. Poison, she was like the one female character that I felt like was kind of disserviced by the story, because I thought, I mean, when you see her, she's interesting to look at, she's clearly maniacal, but then they sort of end up throwing that character away by being like, Professor Lupin whispered to her and then she was getting some ideas, and then there's that whole scene that I really liked between her and Chris Pine where she's basically like, oh, you're not actually interested in me because fucking Wonder Woman's here. And I was like, oh, there's something there. There was a little bit of character where maybe she's a little bit insecure. And then in the end, Wonder Woman gets the opportunity to kill her and then is like, I'm not going to. And I don't know if I would have rather she killed her, but like with Wonder Woman's moral code, Dr. Poison is just as bad as Ludendorff was. Why? Why does she get to live? Maybe that's like a story thing. I don't think so.
The only thing I can justify with that is maybe she knew that Ares was setting her up. It seemed like this was her moral choice, that if she ended up killing Poison for whatever the reason, that it would justify kind of punishing all evildoers without actual like consideration of rehabilitation or that kind of thing, which is what she's sort of supposed to be about. And giving people a fair shot and stuff. And that then had she killed Poison, she would basically have kind of agreed to join with Ares, that humanity in general sucked, and that once we get rid of them,
to wipe it out,
it'd be better off. The world would be better off. I mean, but that's the problem, right? Like, the storytelling was so randomly
it was
weak in spots that it just doesn't really give you an ending.
And maybe that could have even been rectified if there was just like a line of dialogue exchanged between them after Ares is killed, but we never see her again. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, like there's that scene where the Germans are like,
or even just tie her up to something so that when the police come in, they know she's there instead of she's just running away.
She experiences some sort of consequence, because it's like that character, there's so much setup for how evil she is. And that's cool and exciting. And we see Ludendorff, you know, pay the price for his. But we don't know what happens to her. And I don't think that that is a setup for a later movie.
If they do use her again, don't use her in the second film, if there is one. Like, save her. If this continues to be a successful franchise, save her. Flush her out and save her and her better storyline for, like, three movies in.
Ooh, okay.
Like, bring her back. Like, once people have kind of forgotten what the point of her was, and then, you know, but really rework it and have her come back as like a legit, like, hardcore character. And it's fine if she's not the main big bad. I was fine with that with this one. Yeah. It's just that she needed to have a stronger relationship either with Ares or with Ludendorff.
Right.
Like, either Ares could command her to do things in her mind, and she felt like she was being invaded, and that's why she was getting all these epiphanies on the poison. Mm-hmm. Maybe that would have been a good, better connection, rather than just like, because it killed me when she's sitting in her office the first time we kind of see her in Ludendorff, when she gives Ludendorff the like pick me up speed potion.
And the cocaine,
she's sitting there and she has all of her notes on her desk that she's obviously gone through and worked through gazillions of times before he's walked in, and all of a sudden the wind blows and she's picks up this one random note that's been sitting there. She's like, oh well, hey, here's one of my notes, got it.
See, what I assumed was that was Ares being like, hey, here's the note.
Yeah.
Here's the one. But I'm,
That is what they imply.
Right.
But I just thought it was kind of weak.
I love that she wears a Phantom of the Opera mask. I think that revealing what was underneath her Phantom of the Opera mask was borderline pointless, because, like, what was it going to be?
Right.
Her hot face?
Yeah. Definitely, she was disfigured in some way.
Especially the speech that came along with it from Ares, where he's saying, "How don't you want to destroy these people? They're evil, they're evil." And then her mask blows off. And I don't know if that was supposed to show that it elicits pity from Wonder Woman. And so that's part of the reason why she spares her, is because it occurs to her, like, she's been injured in the past. Maybe there's more to her story. And I think that that's me being very generous to the storytelling.
Yeah. Because I assume that that was her own I mean, I could be wrong, but I was like, oh, she probably just spilled.
I don't think it is. God, isn't it that she got experimented on or something happened to her?
Oh, that's a way better story.
Yeah.
But
that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
And so then, you know, Ares is on this hate all human speech and using her as the like tempting little like bug to smush for Wonder Woman to like bring her over to the dark side. And then the mask flies off. And so I couldn't tell if it was meant to elicit pity from Wonder Woman, which I think is me really filling in the gaps for the storytellers.
Yeah.
Or if it was more like, which is even more insulting, like, oh, look, she's really ugly, which means she must be evil. And I'm like, Jesus
hot.
Christ.
Yeah.
And so you got to kill her because she's not hot. I'm like, what the heck?
Is that the implication? Because that's such a weird, like, and that feels like a stretch. And the other, like, I just didn't know what they were saying.
Yeah.
With that moment. I don't know. It's fine that Wonder Woman didn't kill her, but because she didn't kill her, which makes sense in story, just give us something. Let us see that character one more time.
And so can we talk about the sword edit? This really pissed me off.
That goes into his hand?
No. Not even that one.
Okay.
So she finally tracks down Ludendorff,
who
thinks he's Ares. Should
have been Alfred Molina.
Stabs him on the top of the roof, right? And now her sword's up there. She comes down and she sees Ares, who's Lupin, inside the little like watchtower that they're in. And she doesn't have her sword with her. And they make a very distinctive close-up shot of her kind of going to grab for the sword and realizing it's not there, that she left it on the roof, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And fucking Ares is in like a pane of glass away from her, having this fucking speech about how he's Ares and she's an idiot. And then it cuts to something else, like Trevor doing something, shoots back to Wonder Woman, and it's her jumping off the roof with her sword in her hand now, and Ares is still chilling in the same spot he was the first frame.
Right.
So I'm thinking, you're the God of War, you spent all this time to kill Wonder Woman, and you're just gonna be like, oh, yeah, Diana, it's chill. Go ahead, get your sword. I'm just going to hang back here and finish my speech when you get back. Like,
well, is it because he knows he can get rid of the sword in a second?
Maybe.
I mean, probably, I guess. But again, filling in the blanks for the storyteller. Like, right. Why not show a whole battle scene where it starts off, like the battle starts off with her realizing that she hadn't grabbed the sword and he's just standing there super chill in his little like British suit and she jumps up to try and get the sword and he fucking swats her out. Or,
oh, yeah, that would have been.
The error is already up there because they already did that trick couple times in there. Is that, oh god, fuck. Who edited this fucking film? Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I guess if you bother to build that tension in the first place, then yeah, like, fucking pay off on it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was like so, I was like giggling when, you know, Ares is doing the thing where he's like, and now I'm over here. And now I'm on this side of the window. Mm-hmm. Where am I now? I'm behind you.
It's just like,
okay, we get it.
Yeah.
You're Ares.
Can I talk a little bit about how the world is receiving this movie and it broke box office records for having the biggest opening ever from a female director, Patty Jenkins. For the opening weekend, it earned, I think, $103 million domestic at the box office, beating out such movies as the first two Iron Man movies in their opening weekends, as well as the first two Captain America movies. So it's one of the higher grossing superhero movies. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, I don't know if we're counting things like Catwoman and Elektra, but I don't. And so to me, this is like the first major motion picture that's a superhero movie that revolves around a female character. So it's just awesome that it's...
And Catwoman and Elektra were always kind of side characters. Like, this is one of the main trinity from DC that's never gotten her due. Mm-hmm. So, finally.
Until now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just... it's awesome. And it's getting pretty rave reviews, audiences, and...
Which is...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot of... Okay.
Say it, just say it, because I agree.
I don't think that it is as good as I feel like there is, and I'm sure that there's a word for this that I don't know, but I think
it's called white knighting.
Yes, I think that is, and not that, you know, Patty Jenkins did a wonderful job. It's a good movie. I like it. I saw it twice. I'm thinking about seeing it a third time, but I think that there is that, you know, halo effect of like, oh my gosh, a woman did what a man does all the time. Let's, you know, like, and here is your crown and all this stuff. And, you know, it's so amazing to people that a woman did something that a man does all the time, that there is this weird halo effect and it's regarded maybe. But, like, I don't think historically this will be 97% on Rotten Tomatoes, you know? I'm not articulating myself the way I want to.
I agree with you. I'm actually going to take it a little bit meaner.
Go for it.
Again, let me preface. Massive Wonder Woman fan, so I was going in really nitpicky. Mm-hmm. Fun movie. Definitely worth going to see if you have young children. Like, this is perfect. Especially young girls who want to have, like, a hero to look up to. Perfect for them. And young boys. This is a good, solid family superhero movie. You know, the plot holes and the editing and things like that that I have issues with can be easily fixed. You know, I don't know why they didn't the first time, but that's just I'm glad it exists and I liked it. That said, I think that the overwhelmingly glowing reviews in regards to the white knighting, while I do think yes, it's definitely part of the halo effect of, oh wow, like, isn't it how cool that a woman could finally do something that a man could. I definitely think that's part of it. Mm-hmm. I also think a lot of it is the fact that currently with Clinton and the Trump situation and, you know, the March for Women in general and just the kind of uptick in feminism, I think there's a lot of reviewers out there who are afraid to come out against the movie because then they are going to be vilified, whether rightfully so or not. So I think a lot of people are giving this movie a bigger pass than maybe it deserves on the technical aspect of the thing because of their fear of being dragged by society.
That's fascinating because, I mean, and that opens up a whole other rabbit hole of, you know, who are the critics, and it's again a very male dominated field, and
Which it's good because, yeah, you should be fucking afraid of us.
Right.
But it's bad because if we really want things to be fair, then we need to look at this movie the way that we would look at any DC film.
Right. Who's and, giving the actual honest...
Yeah.
No one that I've seen. Like, and the thing is, like, the major plot holes, like some of the stuff we've talked about already that I've heard from a number of people, male, female, whatever, that I didn't see any of those noted in any of the reviews.
Oh,
that
the
I
fact
read.
That Wonder Woman became Wonder Woman because Steve Trevor, a man, was able to sacrifice himself for the greater good instead of her just coming out of the gate like a total fucking badass like she should be. No, I'm not bitter or pissed at all about this. Like, what the fuck?
Well, let's talk about that. Yeah.
Well, how about when she like does her like wrists crossing each other and this whole like shockwave on the island is
that
boom.
Dolby Digital
and then
sound.
No one that's not addressed then. Like, no one's like, what was that? Why wasn't she like, what was that thing I just did? What is that power I have? What? That was weird. I've
like,
never done that
holy
before.
Holy shit. I need to go on a nature walk right now.
Right. And then cut to Steve.
Steve showing up.
Questions.
Yeah.
Okay. These are more nitpicky, logistical, Jamie doesn't understand comic book world questions. Seeing the Mascara, Steve pops on through. That made sense to me. He literally flies through what appears to be a force field of sorts.
Kind of, yeah.
Right. And then, so I understand why he bursts through it, because he's like crashing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wonder Woman saves him. They have their Little Mermaid moment. But then the moment where the Germans are peeking through the force field, are we to believe there is truly just a thin layer of fog? And this is the first time in 800 years that anyone has peered through a thin layer of fog? Like, that part was confusing to me.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember in the comics how they justified it. I think it's gone through a couple different iterations where it was just kind of a foggy force field that you just didn't notice. I mean, think in World War One. There were still areas of the world that weren't completely
blind spots.
So I'll like give it kind of a pass. Okay. I think other times there was alternate dimensions that it was on and that.
That's what I assumed it was.
Yeah.
But then it didn't seem like that was actually what it was because that guy like sticks his head and he's like, hey, it's pretty in here. And then
I kind of always think of it the way that you're supposed to think of Atlantis in pop culture, where it potentially exists, but nobody really sees it. Like
but
Bermuda, think of like Bermuda Triangle, right? You're flying through but the Bermuda Triangle and everything suddenly disappears.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm glad the Germans get through, and I'm glad that we get that awesome battle scene.
That was so good.
It was so good. Mm-hmm. Like, that was so cool to see a Zack Snyder style, you know, holographic card fight scene where half of the people battling are women, and they're so, that was fucking really cool. Like, that was so exciting.
And then the women win. They defeat all the men.
Mm-hmm. All the men die.
All the men die.
Except for Chris Pine.
Most of the women survive except for Robin Wright, and that's a sad emotional scene.
Right. And then Wonder Woman pulls a, sorry to keep going into my Disney princesses, but she pulls a Pocahontas. And she's like, no, don't kill him. He's my friend. Even though it's like, you don't know that.
Yeah.
But whatever. You know, for the story, let's give him B of the D.
And another aerial moment where he's in the hot tub and he's moving his legs around in the lagoon and being all charmed about the water.
Both times I saw
staring
the movie,
at his toes.
big laugh when Chris Pine looks at his little toes.
Oh,
see,
yeah.
I actually didn't mind that so much. That I thought was a cute little nod, but now that you've connected the other one to it for me as well,
like, Patty
now I'm
a
like,
Little Mermaid
oh, shit.
Fan?
I mean, who isn't, though, really?
I know. I mean, I love the Little Mermaid.
What's cool about this, though, not that she is a Disney princess, but Diana.
No.
She has a mom, unlike
she does have
any
a mom.
Disney princess.
Oh, good.
So, yeah.
And is very comfortable with the illusion that she doesn't have a dad.
Yeah.
That's not
she's
like
chill.
Right. Because I feel like that's a common trope in, I mean, male and female characters of like, you don't know who one of your parents are. And so you feel like a part of yourself is missing. And, you know, she never seems to have a problem with the fact that she has no like male role models because she has 400 female role models.
Yeah. And we get that funny scene when she and Steve are on the boat back to London.
Love that scene.
And, he's like, well, so I'm the first man you've ever seen. What about your dad? She's like, I was made from clay, and then Zeus brought me to life. And he's like,
okay. a lot of Brendan Fraser reads slash okay. These are the scenes that remind me more of Marvel movies where it's like yeah. Superhero gives like, oh, this here's a superhero answer, and they're like, okay, like there's Chris Pine has 400 moments where he's like, oh wow, that's weird, and then everyone's like, haha, we're with him, you know.
I gotta say though, it's some of the best banter that I've seen in a DC movie yet.
It's good, like, it's funny.
Really, the two of them together was the highlight of the movie for me, was mm-hmm. the banter mm-hmm. back and forth. I thought they handled it really well, where they're just two people hanging out and just not really knowing a hell of a lot about each other and just kind of right. goofing, but like getting along. Like it wasn't, I never felt like it was geared one way or the other too hard, whether it was like male gaze or was it female gaze. It just was. It was just like people.
A relationship. Steve is a very well-written character. Chris Pine does a great job with the part, but I think that this, you know, speaks to a lot of superhero girlfriends and, you know, girlfriends in movies in general, where usually it tends to be the hottest woman around ends up being the romantic interest of the developed male protagonist. And here it's like Wonder Woman's a very well-developed character. I have no problems there. But, you know, Steve, I get why she likes him, because we get to know him a little bit and we get to know his backstory. We're given a whole section that's important to the story. Like Steve's backstory is critical to the story. Mm-hmm. There are times when they work together. There's times when they disagree. There's, you know, and then at the end, they sort of go on two separate missions towards the same goal. And Steve's like this great character. And so that when he, you know, and this obviously huge spoiler, when he dies at the end, you really like feel that, and it's, you know, you're sad to see him go. And that is, I feel like, a luxury afforded to very few female romantic interests in any movie. And it's so, like, I really liked their relationship, and it was really fun to watch.
Well, so then that brings up the question, is this movie really about Wonder Woman, or is this movie about Steve Trevor?
Well, I had a problem with the love, and just because it was like a romantic heteronormative love with a man was like what gets her to be like, I'm powerful. And like when he dies, that's the catalyst that makes her tear through all the bad German guys.
Yes. Yeah.
And then it's what gives her basically the strength at the battle at the end to be like, finally, now I can defeat Ares. Because like she has a whole flashback where before you couldn't hear what he was saying to her, but then in the flashback, right. He like gives her the watch and he's like, I love you. She's like, oh, wait, someone loves me? Now I'm strong enough to kill Ares. And it's just like, come on.
Yeah, I had a big problem with that too. Okay. Less because of the love connection, because I just thought, okay, well, and I liked the love story up to that point. So I was like, all right, fine. Mine was more just that they felt it necessary that to turn her into the fully realized Wonder Woman that she could be.
The love of a man.
It was the love of a man that ended up sacrificing himself for the greater good, mm-hmm. you know, it turned it all to become about Steve Trevor again. And I just didn't think that that was necessary. Right. I was fine with the relationship. I just didn't like that. That's what kicked it off for her to become fully powerful.
Agree. Also, would he have needed to even sacrifice himself if she was going to defeat Ares anyway?
Hello, guys. Let's plan ahead a little bit, right?
Maybe wait off on your suicide mission to see if I can kill this bad guy first.
Ooh, I wonder how the impact would have changed if she defeated Ares and then Steve died. That might have been a more...
Well, the whole thing, was that they didn't want the plane on the ground because she was going to fight Ares, and they were afraid... This is what I took out of it. They were afraid that if anything happened to the ship and it exploded, it was going to wipe out everybody besides her.
So they had
Ares.
To get it off the ground.
So they had to get it off the ground and kind of out. Gravity, oh, but you know what it was? It was flammable. So he knew he wanted to take it off the ground and then also blow it up so that it would burn into the atmosphere and not trickle down. I answered my own question. That's what it was.
Okay, so there was a reason. Okay.
Because it was flammable. Because he asks one of the guys that he's with if it burns.
Is hydrogen flammable? I've never been to second grade before.
And then the chief says, honestly, if you'd asked me that question, I would not have been able to answer it. So I was like, is hydrogen? I'm like, everything's flammable.
Everything burns.
Just to backtrack just a tiny bit. I liked that in so many superhero movies where there's a man as the lead, there's almost always this whole thing where it's like, I can't let her know who I am. I'm Superman. I'm Batman. I'm Spider-Man. I'm any other number of people, but she can't know my true self. And I just liked
it. She'll never understand.
There was nothing about this movie that was bogging. Like, that was never bogged down. Like, there was just like... Yeah, I'm a goddess, and you're a man, and...
Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
They kind of even poked fun at that, too, at themselves, because when she was trying on all the different outfits, he's finally like, she comes out with the one that she ends up wearing, and Steve Trevor's like, I told you not to be so distracting, and like gives her a pair of reading glasses, mm-hmm. a la Superman Clark Kent. And Etta Candy is literally like, oh, yeah, because that suddenly changes the way that she looks. And they just kind of like turn the screw a little bit on themselves of like, okay, cool.
I wanted more Etta Candy. Well, she was another like character who I like really, I mean, obviously like the polar opposite of Dr. Poison, but we get a great introduction to both of those characters and then we never get to really follow mm-hmm. through on that character. And there are two characters that I assume are not going to come back, so it sucks that they don't get the... full.
I think we will see them.
Really?
This goes to my theory a little bit. I'm wondering if... So in the TV show with Linda Carter, mm-hmm. they had two different kind of timelines going. I think the first season was World War One or World War Two. I'm sorry. It was World one War of the II. Ones. But I can't remember. It's been a long time. But then it became like more modern, like in the 70s kind of thing. Mm-hmm. She knew Steve Trevor then, and they justified bringing the same actor back to the other seasons later on in the 70s as being that man's, like, grandson from so many generations.
Oh. Hmm.
Interesting. I could have sworn I heard that Chris Pine has signed a multi-deal contract with them, that if they have another one, he's involved, in which case he'll probably come back, and possibly then all the old characters that we didn't get a lot of fleshed out storylines back, as well as modern versions of themselves.
I think I like that.
I kind of fine with it because the TV show justifies it.
Right.
So I'm okay.
Now that you've suggested that Chris Pine will come back, of course Chris Pine will come back. Oh, yeah. But I was so afraid that somehow, some way, Steve Trevor would have lived. And if that happened, I would have... I've been so mad.
Passed away.
So I would have ceased to be.
What if he only lived because she was able to save him? Like, just straight up save him. Like, picked him up like a woman and carried him to safety.
I mean, saved him once before.
Yeah.
Which is a great... I love it when a woman saves a man.
I like the part where she meets all his dumbass friends and she's like, I plucked him from the sea.
We don't need to talk about that right now.
I would have been... I definitely think him dying makes sense. Yes. I would have been fine with both of them being successful in their missions and then just choosing to have to part ways at the end because she has bigger and better things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like save the world. And then he just has to Chris Pine for her.
Chris Pine.
But like goes on to live his life perfectly fine doing whatever he does. And then he could have his grandkid and then they could meet up hundreds of years later bang that one. And then that gets real creepy.
Intergenerational.
But does that mean that Steve
Trevor
was just a bad daddy and he had a kid somewhere and he's like, I'm not going to raise this
kid. He does come off as kind of a playboy. So who knows who, when he was visiting one of the ports during World War II.
Spies fuck.
Or World War One, Two.
He fucked one. In the trenches.
He
had a trench baby.
Using one of those sheepskin condoms probably broke.
Oh, no.
I mean, his dick
one of those mud condoms.
He's got an above average dick, as we learn. So he's probably it around.
Did he say
per
he
him
had
repeatedly?
Flinging a his bigger dick around.
Dick, or was he just like, I'm more virile?
I don't think he would be like, I come harder. I don't think that's a hot thing to say. My dick might be small, but I come hard. Like, that to me is a terrifying visual. Just a tiny penis, just like, like that's the kind of vigor that I think no one is looking for.
No.
But there's plenty of them out there. Small dicks coming hard. Oh, you know it.
Let's never talk about this again.
I would like to open a dialogue.
Can we talk more about the relationship between Diana and Steve?
Yes, please.
So there's a concept called the born sexy yesterday trope, which is very common in sci-fi, where there's a woman who's from another world. She's either an alien or some sort of like magical creature or a cyborg or something like that. You see it in Tron, you see it in The Fifth Element, in Splash, and a whole bunch of movies like this, where they are physically mature women who have, like, gone through puberty and everything like that, but they have a very, like, infantile naivete, and it's this whole thing where, like, I've never seen a man before, and I don't understand how the world works, and what's sex? What's kissing? And it's, like, this whole thing where there's, like, this weird power dynamic where the one man that she meets, they become, like, love interests for each other, but, like, he has to teach her about the world and specifically about sex. And it's, like, this weird, what I think is, like, a power struggle where, like, why is she this, like, weird little sex baby? And he's like, I'll show you how it works.
It's that Lolita effect.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And this movie could have followed that trope, and it does a little bit in terms of, like, she's from a world, she's not familiar with contemporary society, she's never met a man before, but I think it also generally subverts the trope because she's very well versed on human sexuality. She's read all 12 volumes of whatever work that was, which
is treatises, something,
an anthology about sex, basically. Uh-huh. And you know, she, like,
Anne Rice's The Claiming of Sleeping Beauty. Got it.
So it was just nice to see that trope not happen again when it could have happened based on, you know, some of the details that they were setting up in the story.
I mean, I guess the closest was when she was on the beach and she was like, you're a man?
Yeah.
But then, yeah, they took a left turn there. Which, right. Thank God.
Well, but, and then also there's that moment where she's like, what is snow? There are a few blind spots in her knowledge where I'm like, she knows every language in the world, but she... snow.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
She's like, what is this? And then he's like, this is how you dance and you pull someone. And she's like, I see. And
no,
it's like,
she's like, that's not fucking dancing. I know how to dance. That's sway.
I want to see the Amazons dance, first of all.
Yes.
But,
yeah, right? Because that's going to be amazing.
Right. Like, there's a lot of stomping and kicking and maybe even punching each other in the face.
Hell yeah. But I feel like I'm bored.
And I guess in that scene, you know, where she's learning to dance, she's sort of like, I'm horny, you know, and that's okay.
But
it's okay,
you know what? I let it go because when they're finally in the room and it's implied that they have sex, she grabs him first.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
she takes charge. Yeah.
Cool.
Yes. I noticed that as well. And
it's like a little switcheroo there. So I'm like, all right, fine. I'll let the dancing pass.
I would say the closest thing we got to sort of going back to this Born Sexy Yesterday trope of, like, her not recognizing that she has sexuality, which is a big part of this trope. Like, the women, these mature women in these roles in this trope, like, they don't know that they're hot and naked. Or they're, like, they don't know they're hot and naked. They don't know that
Help
they're...
Help me! I don't know I'm hot and naked! Well,
that's the next CBS reality show. Hot and naked.
I'm hot and naked. Get me out of here.
Well, so they get... They'll, like, disrobe in front of men, not realizing that that's, like, maybe not an appropriate thing to do, or, like, that they don't realize that they have sexuality. That happens in, like, The Fifth Element and stuff like that. And, like, she sort of does take her robe off in the middle of the store that they're in, but it's not because she's like, I don't know that I'm a sexy baby. It's just she's like, this is just what I wore. This is my outfit from the Amazon island. And like, why would I?
And I was like dreading a makeover. I was dreading it. I think I vocalized to
you
that I would commit seppuku if there was a makeover scene. And they did do it, but it didn't bother me the way that I thought
it was
going to bother
me. It was
me.
Just mostly a commentary on how impractical women's clothing is.
It made sense for the story.
Yeah.
If it hadn't, if they forced it, I'd have been.
And then,
like,
you get that line about, like, oh, sometimes I engage in a little bit of fisticuffs. And that was fun. and even the silly, like, she's carrying her shield and her sword around. Like, I don't know. That didn't really bother me because I can imagine a fish out of water male superhero where it's the same. Kind of goofy, like, he doesn't know to put his sword away. And it blows over pretty quickly, and she adjusts pretty
quickly. It's like when the Hulk doesn't realize his size and accidentally, like, knocks over an entire building, but he's not doing it on purpose kind of thing.
It's a trope, but it felt more like a superhero trope.
Right, and I didn't mind the way they handled any of that in this movie. And when she's like, ice cream, this is delicious, you should be so proud of
yourself. Actually, like, that's actually, I did some reading about that.
That was so sweet.
Apparently that happens a ton in Wonder Woman. It happens in the comic books. It's happened in cartoon series like Wonder Woman and ice cream. That's like a thing.
Oh, she loves ice cream. Aww.
Yeah. I'll try to remember to put this up on our Twitter and Instagram and stuff. There was like a photo like timeline of Wonder Woman with that exact exchange, receiving ice cream, tasting it and saying, "You should be so proud." Like that's an exact so cool. thing that happens over and over. Mm. Yeah.
Well, that's a nice little Easter egg. I never even noticed that myself.
Yeah. Huh.
Cool.
It's a fun one.
If you just keep harping on this subject, one of the like aspects of this trope is that like, you know, she's super naive, which is not at all what Diana is, because at one point Steve is like, "Where am I and who are you people?" She's like, "We are the bridge to a greater understanding." Like she like has been alive for presumably hundreds, if not thousands of years.
Patty Jenkins, 800 years.
800 years. Okay. Yes.
Which begs the question for me of like, how long does it take for this growing up sequence with Robin Wright? Like between like tiny Wonder Woman and 12-year-old Wonder Woman, is that actually 300 years?
It might be, yeah.
Could be.
And then Hippolyta realizes for the first time after 300 years, that's where she's going. Like, anyways.
Well, they all age. I don't know. Their aging has been weird, too. I think if they get rid of their wristbands at some point, they would age. If they left the island, they would age. It was a gift from the gods and none of them age, or they just age really slowly over time. Like, it's all kind of different.
And then a quick comic book question. Why can't Wonder Woman ever go back once she's left? If it's so easy for Steve to just show up, why can't Wonder Woman ever go back?
I don't think it's like, well, the way that I took that is that it's not that she's physically unable to go back. It's more like, well, for this movie, and like even in the TV show and a couple of the other comics, it's implied that she's not allowed to come back because she's disobeying her mother. And so it's kind of like, if you want to take this step, fine, but then know what you're doing. Because part of the deal in the comics that Wonder Woman became Wonder Woman, she wasn't just born Wonder Woman necessarily. I mean, she was born better than the other Amazons,
as are all three of us,
but there was apparently Wonder Woman before her that she actually had to compete in a competition, like a skills competition, against other Amazons to be able to win the mantle, which is the outfit of Wonder Woman, and that the and that the only reason it's in the colors of the American flag is because it is shifted to identify with whatever country they're going to help. So she's wearing that red, white, and blue because she's going to go help America. Or if she, let's just say for whatever reason, Wonder Woman was going to go help Russia, it would be different colors.
Oh, so that's not really touched upon in the movie. It's just so they don't see that outfit at all. And we're just like, oh, that's the outfit. And
yeah.
I didn't even question it because I'm like, oh, my God, the outfit.
Anyway, point is like, I don't think she's physically unable to come back. It's more like, this is your duty. You took this upon yourself. You're supposed to be an ambassador to man's world. That means you need to live there. You can come visit. She's visited Themyscira once or twice in the comics just to like hang and be like, hey guys, what's up? Chill. Yay. Love it. You know, Christmas was great. Whatever, you know, whatever we're doing. Okay. And then had to go back though.
Okay. So that wasn't, I interpreted that as like you physically will not be. Okay. That makes more sense.
Well, who knows? I mean, I don't know what they're going to be doing moving forward with the movie. Do you want to hear my theory for number two? Who the bad person's going to be?
Yeah.
So they made such a big stink that Zeus is actually her father. Mm-hmm. Well, Zeus has been the father of many children in Greek mythology, all of whom were either tortured or their mothers tortured by Hera, because Hera is a super jealous wife who, when she finds out that Zeus is
fucks and he shouldn't be fucking other people.
Well, like, go after Zeus, though. Don't go after the other ones, you know. Don't after the kids. I mean, Hera's anger is justified. I just feel it's slightly misplaced.
Misdirected. Okay, yeah.
That being said, I would love it if Hera, and this allows then for all the other Greek gods to come back, I would love it if Hera decides to either go after Hippolyta and then forces Wonder Woman, even if it's just like a brief scene, to come back to the island and try to defend slash save her mother and Paradise Island in general. Or if Hera just straight up for the entire movie is the next big bad.
Which would be cool, because then you have a female big bad, which you often don't see.
You have
and probably an older female too.
But Hera would be dope.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Or Cersei would be good too.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I could toss Game of Thrones in there.
Ladies, don't fuck Zeus. Just as a rule,
sometimes
don't
fuck Zeus.
You will get pregnant. He's extremely fertile.
Yeah. The problem is sometimes he doesn't give you a choice.
Zeus is a bad
Oh, yeah, Zeus is a rapist.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh,
Zeus is not that's the best. That's a different podcast. We can't get into it.
A few things I wanted to just either lines of dialogue or just moments I really enjoyed. The scene when they're on the boat, man, favorite scene in the whole movie.
I love that. Yeah.
When they're heading to London, they're kind of like skirting around sex and sleeping together. And oh my God, do you sleep with women? Do I sleep with men? I don't know. And she's like, they've concluded that men are required for procreation, but when it comes to pleasure, not necessary.
Good night.
And then she like rolls over great. And faces away from him. It's I love it so much.
Yeah. And imagine doing that to a big name Chris.
Right. And he's all like, man, you know where I come from? I'm above average. I'm a spy. I've got a lot of, you know, stamina.
The word vigor is invoked.
Yeah. But she's just like, shrug. Another part that I really enjoyed. Okay, so there's a bunch of times where Steve is like, you can't come in here. Can't come in this room. We can't do that. She's constantly being told no. And then she does it anyway, which is great. Mm-hmm. So she goes into this room and they're having all these men are having this meeting. And she's like, shame on you. You're cowards fighting from afar. You know,
Chris Pine says, she's with me, and she's like, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And then, so later on, or maybe before that, I can't remember exactly when it happens, but he just keeps being like, sorry, there's nothing we can do. Like, we can't stop the whole war. What I can do is bring this book back to my superiors, and like, that's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. We can take it to the men who can do something about this. And she's like, I am the man who can. And I was like, yes.
That was a very yes queen moment. There. That was a part of the movie that doesn't necessarily relate to the theme of our podcast, but that I thought was very interesting about the Steve Wonder Woman dynamic, which was basically just the Wonder Woman and normal people dynamic of, you know, her mission, and it makes sense, that's who she is to do the grand gesture of this is what you do, and if she were mortal, she'd be dead in 45 seconds, very sad, what an idiot. Fortunately, she is not easily killed and all this stuff. But the interesting part, like one of my favorite scenes in the movie that is between Wonder Woman and Steve is after she kills Ludendorff and then realizes that it's not that easy to stop bad things from happening is killing one Alfred Molina lookalike. You can't just kill one Alfred Molina lookalike and then everything's fine.
He doesn't look anything
First
like
of all,
Alfred
go
Molina.
After Alfred Molina if you're going to do that. Second of all, Alfred Molina would have played that part better, but you know, he did a fine job. And then Steve says, you know, words that get me horny, maybe I'm the problem, which is great. But there's that great interaction where Wonder Woman sort of has this crisis of like, oh no, people might just be
horribly
shitty. And then, you know, in the end sort of goes back on that. But she, at that moment, I was sort of just like, I thought that was going to be the lesson. It's like, well, people can be shitty sometimes and you can hang out or not, which is sort of how I feel about it.
Isn't that kind of what she concludes? And then she's like,
but then there's the big speech about there's so much more.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily need the speech. I could have had it just be the, I've just decided to stay because I just decided to stay.
I'm pretty much the only one who can fucking help.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I thought, because that bugged me at first, the first time we saw it, and there was that whole speech of like, they're all you say, but there's so much more. But then again, if I was an 8-year-old girl seeing that, that would be like an amazing, that would have been my favorite part if I was like a little kid seeing that. So I was like, okay, that wasn't for me. And it kind of bugs me, but also I get why it's there.
Well, maybe because as an adult, you've heard that kind of speech portrayed in these kind of movies so many times that you're just already aware where we're going with this. But as like a little, like an 8-year-old girl who this is the first time you're going to ever see a movie like this.
Right.
It would blow your mind.
Right.
And then
you've got
how many years ahead of you where you're going to hear the same shit over and over and over. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I agree. I would have been, as an adult, I would have been totally fine with her just being like, it's cool. I'm happy to be here. And that's
right. I think
I'm going to go.
I think it's like the cooler, stronger decision to be like, oh, people are bad, but I, you know, what can I do to help? But then also from both the superhero standpoint and like the kids are seeing the movie standpoint, I get how the big final face off and then like love is better than Professor Lupin in his lava suit. Like,
yeah, we got to stick the moral in there.
Right.
for the PG-13 rating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Other scenes where, like, you know, if I'm a young girl or if I'm the woman I am today, which I am, seeing it, I was like, yeah, cool. Anytime that she's doubted or someone, like, tells her to stay put, maybe presuming that she can't help because she's a woman, which is sort of said directly in the scene with the bar whenever Steve is gathering up all his, like, ragtag team of guys who are going to go with him to help save the do the mission, Charlie, the Scottish guy, is like,
fuck that guy.
He's like, I'm not going to waste time protecting some lass. That was my wonderful Scottish accent.
Fuck that guy. I couldn't stand
right? He was such kind of a waste of a character.
Yeah.
I would have kept the chief and the guy, unfortunately, whose name I forget right now.
Samir, and I think they call
Fez guy. Sammy. The guy with
Sammy,
the face.
Yeah.
Yes. I liked him, and I liked the chief. The Scottish guy, I was, oh God.
In that bar scene, he's like, fuck this lady, she's going to slow us down. And then some other dude goes up to try to initiate like a bar fight with him. And Wonder Woman grabs a guy and then throws him across the room. And it's like, oh, really? Is she going to waste your time, you piece of shit? But at the end of that bar scene, that's when we get that fun line from Sam Raimi when he's like, I am both terrified and aroused, which big laugh line in the theater.
Oh, and then they're laughing, they're goofing.
I also like when she's introduced to that character, he like goes in to hug her and she's just like, don't touch me. Can we talk about the no man's land scene? Sure. Sequence.
I mean, I cried both times.
Yeah.
But I felt manipulated, but I did cry both times.
It is emotionally manipulating, but like in a good way, I think. First of all, I didn't pick up on this the first time because I'm dumb, but I was like, whoa, no man's land. No man can cross it,
mm-hmm.
But a Wonder Woman can.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're all just like, you can't go out there. There's no man's land. And she's like, I can do it. And
yes, queen. Yes, queen. Yes, queen.
I do wonder why the German soldiers, when they realized she had a big, gigantic shield and could deflect their bullets, they didn't just start aiming at her feet.
Her legs! Yeah. It was like, shoot this woman in the legs.
Who is trying to still hit her in the head? It's not working.
Somebody. Her legs are... She can't shield her legs as easily with her wristbands. Get her in the legs. Mm-hmm.
It's not like her shoes deflect bullets. It's just her wrists.
And even if her shoes do deflect bullets, we don't know. No one ever
That's true.
Tries.
Yeah, we could have used a scene where they shoot her in the leg and she has those like boots.
No one ever gets her. No one ever snags her. That's fine.
It's fine.
I know that's part of the character.
I did totally think of that though. I was like, I would have shot her in the foot.
Right. Well, because I also like read the God. There's so many fucking clickbait pieces about this right now. But like, you know, I read like, well, why does Wonder Woman wear a skirt? Why does everyone on the island wear a skirt? And that's like Greek shit. I get why they wear skirts, because Greek men also wore fucking skirts.
Yeah, sometimes so I think they went into battle naked. They definitely competed in the Olympics naked.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like the costume wasn't confusing to me. I had no problems with the costume. And I loved from the movie standpoint how she was never out of the costume for too long. Like they put her in that dress with that woman. Did she kill her? Or there's the German lady where she's looking at her? Or is she just like naked in the woods somewhere?
I think she's probably just passed out naked in the woods somewhere.
Right before the gala? Yeah.
She got roofied by Wonder Woman and, you know, or it was like a pressure point was hit and she wakes up in her, what you know, however many layers she had on.
I did want to talk about her costume, her outfit.
Yeah.
I like how it was like sexy but not sexualized. Like,
also, there were nipple spaces.
Were there?
Well, and everyone in the mascara too. Like, the breastplates had space for nips.
Oh,
yeah,
there was space
important
for nips. I guess.
I mean, they were all smooth. Yeah,
they weren't like pointy nipples.
They didn't do what's his face Batman nipples.
Yeah,
they didn't do Clooney nips.
Yeah, they didn't do Clooney nips.
Thank goodness.
Joel Schumacher, shout out though. Shout out to Joel Schumacher.
I would agree. I dug all the outfits, even for the Amazons on Themyscira. I thought all of it was, sexy but not over sexualized.
Right. Like, and no male gaze.
Seemed
like
relatively practical.
And that's, I think, one of the benefits of having a female director and an intelligent director in general is you never get that shot that is so easy to get away with in movies like this, in any blockbuster, of like the pan down of the outfit. You never get that. You never even get sectional body shots of the outfit that I can think
of. You kind
of
do when she's going up the ladder to get into no man's land. But it's kind of secondary because it's unavoidable. They're really trying to get shots of her feet climbing, her weapons, and her shield.
Yeah, it's never like the her ass is, or her tits.
But the problem is like the shield is by the legs, you know? And so... Right. But that's like always the fine line, right? Like you.
But yeah, it's like, could we get that same shot of?
I mean, they are superheroes, so they need to be stylized because they're supposed to be stylistic versions of humans, better than ourselves, but still reminiscent of ourselves. And so it's hard, I think, to showcase that kind of stuff without having it happen on its own a little bit.
Right. I mean, it's the way it was done, because I remember what you're saying now.
Yeah. But there's been plenty of beefcake shots of like the Marvel guys and stuff.
Right.
So.
Like it didn't feel exploitative in a way that felt like, here's the lady kind of thing.
If anything, I like that we get that scene where Steve hops out of the hot tub and he's naked and he's like holding his junk. And
I could have done
like,
that. Like,
oh, my watch.
Everyone needs to know what a
dick.
Big hog I have. Yeah. Like, I get why. It was like, PG-13, we got to see. You know,
I kind of dug it.
Hogs out, though.
You're going to say hogs out for one of the wealthy Chris's. But,
see, I watched it and I was like, huh, I was not a big fan of you before, but I feel myself slowly
suddenly
being convinced.
I've been fully won over by Chris Pine, and I'm like low-key furious about it.
My only problem really with Elite, I mean, maybe I'll watch it a few more times and pick up on some other things.
Let's go see it again.
Let's do it. I'm free right now. with Diana's character, my main problem with like her development and characterization is she's like maybe almost too perfect. Like, she's classically beautiful, she's very smart, she's resilient, that's the thing, she's a demigod.
But I get what you're saying, because that's actually her problem, and as a fan that's my problem with her in comics. Like, she's almost too goody two shoes.
Yeah.
And it kind of is the same, it borders on that same issue that some people have with Superman, where it's like too good for your own good. Literally.
And that's one of the main reasons I don't really like Superman as a superhero.
And the only reason I don't get super caught up in in that thing is that at least she's a warrior, so knows how to fight and will fight if pushed. So I'm cool with that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I get what you're saying. It's like almost too good. And like, there's not any real struggle for her. Maybe we'll see that in the next movie, or maybe we'll start seeing it in JLA. Mm-hmm. Which would be nice. I think maybe now that it's done so well, not only will DC and Warner Brothers give Jenkins and Godot, how do they pronounce it? Godot. I've seen a variety of different ones, but at least that.
Waiting for Gal Gadot.
Maybe they'll end up giving them even more input on the story and to give her a little bit more of, like, you know, something to really fight against, as well as. You know, I mean, I think the mother-daughter relationship and her taking off would be a great one to delve into. But I totally get what you're saying.
A pretty white movie, although some of the Amazons are women of color.
Then
some of the team of the ragtag crew who's trying to go on the mission.
I think,
I could have used more diversity in the Amazons, especially in more primary roles rather than just kind of secondary in the background. For a while, when they were first introduced, I felt like I was watching a little bit of, like, Amazon's Beverly Hills, you know?
The two most powerful ones are hot blondes.
Because Hippolyta in the comics is dark-haired like her daughter.
Oh,
she's
really?
Not blonde. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I don't know about Antiope.
I sort of wondered about that because I'm like, well, she at least did. I mean, and I guess the excuse given by the movie is like, well, she was carved from clay, or that's the story. Yeah. So she's just like, you know what? Let's get some dark hair in here. There is one, and not to be an apologist because I think there can always be more diversity. There's a scene right after they're like, do we kill Chris Pine? Do we not? Where Wonder Woman is arguing that they should not kill Chris Pine. And there is a woman of color who argues against her, and she says,
Senator.
Yes.
And you're like, okay. So there's, you know, that
she's got a leadership role. That's nice.
Yeah, which isn't necessary. Which isn't enough.
I mean, she has two lines.
It's not bad. It's just it could be more. And maybe it's because it was some of that stuff was cut for time because we weren't really on Themyscira all that long. So if we go back there, I assume we're going to see a big uptick in all that stuff.
Right.
I do think it's interesting. I love the one of the things that always appealed to me, and I think specifically as a little girl, why I'm so hung up on Wonder Woman is she is a main character, superhero, female who is dark haired. Like, you always have these blonde Disney princesses, with the exception of, like, now as we've, you know, we've had Pocahontas with the Disney movies and
right.
Ariel with the red hair and, you know, Beauty and the Beast.
I am Moana.
Which I thought the Moana thing where Wonder Woman's always like, I am Diana of Themyscira. It reminded me of, like, I am Moana of
Motunui.
Yeah.
You aboard my boat.
Anyways.
So it's good for girls this age that are growing up now to experience that kind of stuff, even on such a basic level as hair color. But for me growing up, it was all blondes all the time.
Unless you're just like, well, okay, Belle, I'll fuck a dog. Fine. You know. Fine, you're a brunette girl, you fuck a dog. That's why, that's your option.
Let's talk about whether or not the movie passes the Bechdel test.
No, I don't think so.
See, I would say for sure.
Oh, it does.
Really? Most of the first act.
First scene, yeah.
But they're always talking about Ares, who's a dude.
They're talking about Ares a lot, but
and
not
Zeus. Some training conversations.
That's what I was picking. Like, can I train yet? You're too young. No. Like,
those are kind of the only ones, though.
And to clarify the Bechdel test a little bit, the whole conversation doesn't need to pass. It needs to be two lines of dialogue.
Oh, well, then, yes.
So it does.
Because even between her and Etta Candy, granted, it was about clothes, but it was about clothes.
But that's a technical part. Well, because there's a lot of movies we've done where technically the movie passes, but it's so by the skin of its teeth where, I mean, Pirates of the Caribbean, we had a big problem with because there was literally one exchange between Elizabeth Swann and a maid that you could argue passes, but also a man is implied, but it's not stated.
Right.
So you can get into the weeds with it, but
I think this is more like clearly yes to pass because they're talking about training and it's a substantial enough conversation. I don't think there's any question about
it. I suppose training, it just happens that there's the bad guy that's the man this time, but like she would need that training for a variety of other issues that come in the future.
Sure.
So, yeah.
We also got a great tweet from a listener of the podcast named Molly Young, who tweeted us yesterday, posting a screenshot that her mom had sent her since they started listening to the Bechdel cast, saying that, according to Molly's mom, Wonder Woman passes the Bechdel test in the first scene. So we taught Molly's mom what the Bechdel test
Yay!
Is. So shout out to Molly's mom and Molly.
Yeah.
Cool.
They are talking about men, they're being like, oh, Ares is a piece of shit. Hey, this white guy that just showed up on our island, we don't trust him. Like, it's all...
I am a spy! So,
yeah.
Brendan Fraser would have done that. Same read.
So while those scenes do not pass, I do enjoy it. If women are talking about men,
it's mean.
It's if they're insulting them or they're being like, we don't trust you.
Kind of like real life.
Right.
Behind the door, you know, behind closed doors.
There's not a ton of scenes outside of the Themyscira that pass.
The scene where Diana and Etta talk about clothing.
And where Diana speaks with that. And this makes her sound disgusting. With that trench woman and her trench baby.
Oh, right. Yeah, she's
about
like,
trenches.
God.
They discuss trenches.
That's true.
Yeah, because she's like, oh, my village is under attack. We've all been enslaved. And she's like,
and that's actually a good point because then that kickstarts her into arguing with Steve and crew about, like, we're going to end it my way. And he's like, no. And she's like, you can go fuck yourself. I'm climbing up this ladder and I'm gonna make sure I don't get shot in the foot.
There's more opportunities. I think that there are more opportunities between her and Etta. I think for sure I see no reason why there was never an interaction between Dr. Poison and Wonder Woman. There should have been some sort of conversation.
That's weird.
They were in the same scene multiple times and we just never got to see that. Even like I would have rather Wonder Woman had a run-in with Dr. Poison for a minute at the gala than that weird lecherous moment with Ludendorff where he's like, you know, he like grabs her and he's like, the Germans are good. And it's like, okay, I get it. You're the villain for now. But that was like the one opportunity for it to pass the test again and just like enhance the story that I felt it was like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, true. Despite that, you know, well, let's rate the movie. On our nipple scale, we have a scale that we rate the movie on based on its portrayal of women.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 0 to 5 nipple scale. So I'm going to...
5 being the best.
5 being the best.
Yes. Okay.
5 nipples.
More nipples, the better.
The best. This is hard because I'm inclined to kind of want to give it a 5 out of 5 because Diana, you know, she's a developed character. We see her constantly kick ass. We see her never doubt herself. She's often told, no, you can't do this, or you can't come along, or blah, blah, blah. And she's like, no, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. You know, we see there are other female characters oftentimes, you know, in a superhero movie, there's one woman and she's a love interest and she doesn't have much bearing on the story. Whereas here she's driving pretty much every story beat. So I think it does a really good job portraying women, especially considering the genre that this movie belongs to. I think I'm going to say 5 nipples.
It's a 5 nip?
Yeah, it's 5 nipples for
me. Describe the nips, please.
The nipples. I'm going to give 2 of them to Chris Pine, which we see when he's coming out of the hot tub. So 2. I liked horny Sammy. Sammy was very horny, and he just wanted a hug.
Unapologetically so.
Right.
Yeah.
Wait, who's Sammy?
Sammy's the little, I think he might be Moroccan? Oh, I'm not sure. But okay. Sammy's one of the
he's given
ragtag
an,
group.
He's given an interesting, like, I'm white, so I can't. I'm white, so I can't. But there's an interesting moment with Sammy where he's like, I wanted to be an actor, but I was born the wrong color. Shrug.
Oh.
And that was interesting. I would be interested in hearing what listeners thought of that moment, because I, you know, that felt like, okay, they wanted to acknowledge their non-white character, and that's cool, but we never hear more about it.
Oh, yeah. This actor, at least, I'm not sure what the character is, but this actor is from France, born to Moroccan immigrant parents. But I like the scene where he and Diana are having, like, a language off, where she's like, I can speak Spanish. Well, I can speak Chinese. Oh, but can you speak ancient Greek? No, you can't. I win.
And then Chris Pine says, oh, you're done. Yeah. And he gets one of those other lines, like, ugh.
But
I'm handsome.
But in the theater, everyone laughs and
big
loves
laugh.
It.
Big laugh for Chris. Sorry.
Yeah, I've run out of characters to give nipples away to, but there are 5 of them, and I liked it. I liked the movie.
I'm going to give it 4.5. It doesn't get a 5 for me because I really was, like, frustrated about the missed opportunities with Dr. Poison, especially. But also, I mean, just, like, the tangential female characters. If we had to watch that fucking chode, Charlie the Scottish guy, you know, and then we get the whole story of, like, sometimes he sings. Like, fuck that guy. Kill him. Tell me more about Dr. Poison. So it loses a 0.5 nipple. But, I mean, in terms of a blockbuster movie that represents women well, that never happens. And Gal Gadot is perfectly cast. She kicks ass. She's not objectified in the way that we're sort of expected that she will be based on literally any other blockbuster movie. 4.5 nipples. 2 are going to the Trench Baby. Trench Babies have nipples too. What do they leak? Mud? We don't know. Depends on the gender of the Trench Baby. Give 2 of the nipples to Trench Mommy, and then 0.5 nipple to the fallen Robin Wright. And that's where my nipples are going.
So I'm going to give it 4. I'm going to deduct a nipple, not only for the reasons that you both mentioned, because I think that's where my same issues lie, but also some of the technical choices in regards to edit and story holes really bothered me and were really glaring. So that's where I deduct that 0.5 point. I guess I'm going to give my nipples to the battle scene on Themyscira, the banter between Chris and Wonder Woman.
Really good.
Yeah, can I just split 2 to 2?
2 and 2?
Yeah, that's
yeah, that's kind of it. I thought, definitely wonderful movie. Needed to be done. Wish it would have been done sooner. Happy that it was done at all.
I read somewhere that it was in development since 1996.
I actually have a script from a friend of mine, this guy named Steven Lisberger, who was the creator and director on Tron, the first one.
Interesting.
Who had been called into, I can't remember who it was, maybe WB, maybe DC, to come up with a Wonder Woman movie.
Well,
so scripts have been going around for a long time.
Yeah.
I would like to just, like, plant this now, and I hope 20 years from now we all reflect on this, and it's like, wow, it's insane that the baby actor who played Trench Baby is now the most famous actor in the entire world. I'm planting the scenes for Trench Baby right now.
All right.
Trench Baby, if it's the future and you're listening, I always believed in you. Stay in that trench.
Wonderful. Jessica, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Much. Yeah. So fun.
Sorry if I overtalked.
No.
Wonder Woman, it's been a long time coming and a long time waiting. And so it's like I am so full of emotion. And yet I think I was fair and balanced.
You were. We're thrilled we got a Wonder Woman expert, too, because we don't have the comic book background. So
I don't know if I'd be an expert because I think I got some of my info wrong. But let's just say
certainly more knowledgeable.
Yeah, a knowledgeable fan.
Right.
Yes. I'll take that.
Where can people find you online?
So you can find me over at Nerdist.com or any of our other offshoots like Nerdist's YouTube channel for the Bizarre States stuff. You can find us on iTunes. Mm-hmm. For my personal stuff, my Twitter's at Jessica Chobot. My Insta's Jessica_Chobot. So that's kind of it.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
You can follow us at BechdelCast on Twitter. You can email us at thebechdelcast@gmail.com.
Hey, I guess so.
You can follow us on Instagram, too, at BechdelCast.
If you choose to.
Rate and review us on iTunes, all that fun stuff.
Hey, go for it.
Oh, we are doing a show.
Oh, yeah, because it comes out this week.
Yes. Jamie and I are co-hosting a comedy show at Nerd Melt in Los Angeles.
Hey, that's downstairs.
Right downstairs. I could, like, drop a vat of acid and it would
I could stomp really hard
would create
probably
in the floor,
FYI,
and then we'd be looking down.
It's haunted.
Oh no.
Just letting you guys know that.
I love when I believe in ghosts, first of all. We'll talk about that in another episode.
Let's do the movie Ghost and talk about it. So we're doing a show on June 10th at 9 p.m. It's called the Special Occasionally Show, and it's a benefit for Planned Parenthood. So
we've got some friends of the cast on the show.
We do. Deb DiGiovanni is on it, and then also Nikki Glaser was, but she actually can't make it anymore.
So we brought in another friend of the cast.
That's right.
And now Deb DiGiovanni's on it. So friends of the cast, come on down. All the proceeds will go to Planned Parenthood. We're trying to pack the house. So if you're in the LA area, no excuses.
No excuses.
Come and hang out with your cool friends that you'll bring to the show.
Yeah.
Because we are not those friends.
And it's a great lineup. And tickets are $15 if you buy them in advance. And that's that. Again, thank you so much, Jessica, for being here.
My pleasure.
It's been a wild ride and a blast. And I'm trying to think of like a fun...
Go Trench Baby.
Go Trench Baby. All right, bye.